Decades before Edward Snowden, there was the Citizens Commission to Investigate the FBI. It was a year after Kent State. There were daily protests of the Vietnam War, 1971, when a group of protesters broke into an FBI office in Media, Pennsylvania, stealing documents to try to prove that J. Edgar Hoover's FBI was spying on activists. And long before Daniel Ellsberg's Pentagon Papers revealed a secret war, the burglar sent the FBI papers to media outlets. In a new documentary, former Washington Post reporter Betty Metzger describes the reaction.
At that time, no news organization had dealt with what do you do when you're handed stolen documents. And so that day, in just a few hours, they had to confront those issues. The Attorney General was on the phone repeatedly urging them not to publish.
But published they did, revealing Hoover's surveillance and a single word, COINTELPRO, which years later would be understood to mean a decades-long counterintelligence program that spied on activists, political organizers, and attempted to blackmail Dr. Martin Luther King. The documentary is called 1971. It opens today in New York. And joining us from WHYY are two of the former activists featured in the film, husband and wife John and Bonnie Raines. Welcome to you both.
Thank you.
And I want to ask you, John, start with you. Is it true that after this burglary, the eight of you who performed it rarely spoke, never met together again? You just walked away from this?
Well, we had to go into hiding, of course. J. Edgar Hoover sent 200 agents to try to find the Citizens Commission, and they flooded the city of Philadelphia. So we knew that we needed to go deep underground. And the best place to go underground, of course, is in plain sight. And we were able to do that here in Philadelphia because there were thousands of resistors back then. I mean, our country was in fire in 1970 and 71. Yeah. So we decided as a group, the eight of us, that we needed to disappear from the public discourse and return to our private lives, and we did that.
And Bonnie, it sounds like you didn't feel the need to take credit for it because it did reveal so much. You didn't feel the need to step forward and get attention. But also, had you done that, you might have been charged. And you had three children at the time?
Yes. No, we didn't feel the need to do that. We thought that if we had accomplished what we wanted to and the story got out, the facts got out to the public, we had to think about the worst-case scenario, although we thought we had a good chance of succeeding in the burglary, but we did have to arrange with family members to care for our children if that became necessary.
I think it's important to realize that we were very careful in our preparations. We were not Don Quixotes. We were not interested in being martyrs. We were interested in doing the job that we thought we had to do because nobody in Washington was doing that job, namely supervising and holding J. Edgar Hoover's FBI accountable.
Well, the statutes run out. You can't be charged now. And the Vietnam War now, largely seen even by architects like Robert McNamara as a terrible mistake, 58,000 Americans killed, countless mm-hmm. Vietnamese. Take us back. 1970, John, you were a professor of religion at Temple University. The two of you became involved in the anti-war movement. Bonnie, as we said, mother of three, but very much an activist as well. You both became acquainted with William Davidson, a professor of physics at Haverford College and an anti-war activist, and he's the one who came up with the idea of breaking into FBI offices. What was your response to that initially?
Well, it was you don't really mean that, do you, Bill? And he really did mean it. And then he presented a pretty good case for this. I mean, we knew that J. Edgar Hoover and his FBI were involved in the suppression of dissent. He used massive dirty tricks, surveillance, informers, infiltrators. He did everything he could to bring the streets of this country back to quiet, which would mean the end of the protest movement. Bill Davidson was very persuasive. He was a very intelligent and precise leader. And finally, there were eight of us at the end who said, yes, we think we can do this, so let's go ahead and try.
Well, and Bonnie, I think it's so interesting. You thought originally when you all were first meeting about this wacky idea that being a woman, you might be marginalized. The women's movement was not as strong at that point as the anti-war movement.
That's right.
But you actually became instrumental going to the FBI office, posing as a student.
Well, that was a necessary piece of our plan, which was to to get inside the offices during business hours to see whether there were security measures and what the layout of the offices were. We had done all our casing on the outside environment. Since I was a young woman, I was to pose as a Swarthmore College student asking for an interview with the head of the office about opportunities for women in the FBI, and they were very gracious and gave me an interview.
It could have gone horribly wrong. We understand that when you first got there, the member of your group that was going to pick the lock in the front realized that he couldn't. He had to go around to another one. You could have tripped an alarm. There wasn't one. What were you thinking? Here you have three children at home. What were you thinking when you were doing this?
I thought that we had prepared so meticulously, and that night that we chose to break in was a good night for that because it was a championship boxing match between Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier. And we thought that people in the apartment building where the FBI office was and the police would be listening to the fight and perhaps not paying attention to what we were going to be doing. So we felt, even though we ran into a problem with getting through the first door, I felt that we should just persist and persevere and figure out a way to get in through a second door.
Well, you sent the papers out to various media organizations, and it led to the Church investigations named after Senator Church. He concluded that too many people have been spied on by too many government agencies, too much information collected. The word COINTELPRO, as we said, you found that on a slip of paper. Carl Stern of NBC News later figured out that that was shorthand for the counterintelligence program that not just spied on Americans but tried to ruin their lives. If people saw the film Selma, they know about the letter that was sent to Martin Luther King to harass him. How validated were you, or were you even surprised by how deep it was?
I think I probably was surprised by how much was not only immoral but illegal, and I knew that the American public would take that seriously and expect Congress to act.
Well, also, the story almost never got published. We sent the documents to three newspapers. The Washington Post was one. The L.A. Times was another. The New York Times was another. And both the New York Times and also the L.A. Times refused to publish. Whistleblowers depend upon courageous investigative reporters. We found one, luckily, in Betty Metzger.
At the Post.
But
the
also
Post.
Then those writers, those investigative reporters, need courageous editors and courageous publishers. And that happened at the Washington Post. Once the story was published by the Washington Post, then the voice of silence was broken in Washington. And our senators and congressmen and other pundits finally found their voice. And other newspapers began to demand the retirement of J. Edgar Hoover and an investigation of the investigators.
Yeah. Well, now we come full circle to today, Edward Snowden's revelations that the NSA was involved in surveillance of American citizens and other surveillance. You know, there are a lot of people who might have sided with you in Vietnam who've spoken out against Edward Snowden. This is a different time. We were attacked after 9/11. We need to be more conscious of the nation's security.
Well, I believe our nation is driven by an excessive fear. Yes, we have to worry about the terrorists, but even more we have to worry about how to protect the values of our nation that make our nation worth valuing and make it worth securing. The second president of the United States, John Adams, said something very wise in his time and is still true in our time. He said, "A people that would sacrifice liberty to gain security deserve neither." What he said back then, those many, many hundreds of years ago, remain true today.
Bonnie and John Raines, do I read you about, I'm trying to do the math, about 80 now? How old are you now?
John is 81 and I'm 73, so.
Spring chicken there.
We're rather elderly burglars at this point in time.
Well, I wondered, you had three children, I'm imagining maybe some grandchildren now. What do you tell them about what Grandma and Grandpa did in the 70s?
Well, we did tell them once. We have four children, finally, and seven grandchildren. And we did tell our children when they were older teenagers, and we thought they could put it in perspective. And they weren't shocked because we had been active in many ways politically, and they were really quite proud. And hopefully there's a little legacy of activism that has been passed on to our children and grandchildren.
That it's sometimes okay to break the law?
Exactly. Sometimes you must.
When the law becomes the instrument of the crime, then the only way you can stop that crime is to break that law. We found that out in the civil rights movement, in the laws of segregation. We found out that you have to make a distinction between law and crime. They're not the same.
Bonnie and John Raines, again, they took part in the burglary of the FBI office in Media, Pennsylvania, and found papers that reveal the FBI's surveillance of Americans, including civil rights and anti-war groups. Their story is told in the new documentary, 1971. Thank you so much for talking to us.
Sure. Thank you, Robin.
So sometimes a bad law needs to be broken, but then who decides? What are the questions this raises for you? We'd love your thoughts at hereandnow.org.